RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Time now for Money Talks on RCR Thursday morning. And joining us this morning is Simon Angelo of Wealth Morning. He's Chief Executive Officer and publisher at Wealth Morning. He's been investing in the market since he was 17. He recently spent a couple of years working in the hedge fund industry in Europe. Before this, he owned an award-winning professional services business and online learning company in Auckland for 20 years. He's completed the Certificate in Discretionary Investment Management from the Personal Finance Society in the UK and has written a best-selling book and manages global share portfolios. Perfect for our Money Talks this morning. Simon Angelo, Wealth Morning. Thanks for coming back on our Money Talks, Simon. Good to have you again.
Oh, great to be back, Paul. And I see we've got a cut to the OCR, 25 basis points there. I know a lot of people were calling for that.
Not the Infometrics guy, though.
Yeah, well, there is the argument that he's got to keep inflation between 0 to 3%.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I think equally you can run an economy up to the cliff trying to do that, trying to curb inflation, but you don't actually want to push it over the cliff.
No.
And
no,
we have seen unemployment rise. I think it got near 4.5%. But you've got to be grateful for the problems you do have, Paul. I notice South African unemployment was nudging around 32.5%.
Ooh, ouch.
So you do have to be grateful for the problems you have.
Boy, they must have problems from that then. Gee, all these people sitting around doing nothing. Is that, that's really what that means, isn't it?
It sure does. It shows an economy that's not really working.
Oh, dear. Well, let's get down to a bit of business. Good to get that in first up. Two things we're here to talk about. Red Monday, and we're referring to just the 5th of August, so very recently. And also a piece that you've written, which is on Wealth Morning, which I've just had a read of. Residential property, number one investment for many Kiwis and everything that flows from that. Let's start with Red Monday. Did they come out, did that Red Monday come out of the blue?
Well, it did actually. Like a lot of these kind of black swan events, nobody really predicted it. I mean, I've been around for a while. I've been investing through the GFC and through COVID 2020. And this shouldn't really have hit me as much as it did, but it was just a normal Monday night, 5th of August. I'd had dinner with the wife and kids. I think we'd watched an episode of Big Bang Theory on Netflix. That must have been prescient because there was a big bang
coming. Yeah.
So about 9 o'clock, I went through to my office and brought up the trading desk. My investment officer, John Ling, he was on the other end of that. And within an hour, my own portfolio had fallen $100,000.
Wow.
And, I should be tougher after what I've been through, but this really did affect me because I thought, well, what's happened here? How many days more have we got of this? S&P 500 was down about 8%. By the end of the night, it was rough. It was a lot of blood.
What did happen, Simon? What made this happen?
Oh, well, I'd had a bit of a heads up in the afternoon. I had a chat with a friend of mine who's a very experienced investor, and he said, oh, watch out for the Japanese carry trade. Now, what a carry trade is a lot of investors have borrowed very cheaply in yen, very low interest rates. I think their bank rate was zero at one point. Then they've used that very cheap borrowing to go buy typically US stocks. Now, I know the carry trade pretty well because I've previously borrowed in euro to buy property in New Zealand because it meant paying 4 or 5% rather than 7 or 8% for a mortgage. But you do have to be very, very careful with it, especially when it moves against you. And it moved against those investors very, very quickly. I believe there was about $1.1 trillion involved, which is about the entire market cap of Bitcoin. What you need to do at a time like this, I mean, for the first time, I mean, we've just had it so good for so long, Paul. We've just been riding this gravy train of comfort and plenty. And all of a sudden to see things start dropping through the floor. But look, perfectly normal. When markets get upset, they will fall like an elevator and start climbing again like a staircase. And I mean, this is not obviously personalized advice, but what you need to do is have that little sliver of ice in your heart and get down on your hands and knees and crawl through the blood and find the gold. And fortunately, John, who I trade with, he's a really calm guy. I mean, nuclear war could break out in Europe and he'll be looking at the impact on consumer staples. And he said, Simon, let's get in and buy. And we got some really good buys. And I mean, to be fair, the Japanese carry trade is not going to affect companies we buy. I think we bought some National Grid in the UK, electricity networks in England and America. We bought some Uber, just pulled down by the market and made many tens of thousands of dollars in the ensuing days as the market recovers. But I mean, markets, it's just like a huge blender. It's dealing with all sorts of information and facts and numbers. And this was like throwing a live pig into the blender.
So you've only got, a couple of days window to make hay in that situation?
Yeah, that's right, Paul. I mean, the scary thing is you don't know how many days it's going to keep falling like an elevator. I mean, the last time this happened was COVID lockdowns, where it obviously fell 5-8% over several days. But once we knew it was a Japanese carry trade, we sort of thought, well, we're generally in a bull market. We're in a pretty affable market. It's probably not going to go on too long. So it was a good time to buy. I mean, the legacy media don't help. We had clients next morning who'd read things in local media and they were led to believe there was some kind of major crash or bug in the system, whereas actually these sorts of drops happen once or twice a year in a perfectly normal and a good opportunities.
I got to say, that was the impression I initially got. Oh, my God, they're all falling. And, you know, and it took not too long after that to realize, sort of without the detail, what you're talking about now.
Yeah, well, that's entirely understandable. I mean, one of our clients sent us an article in local legacy media. I had a read of it and, you know, I mean, it looked like gossip for people with no friends.
I mean, MSM. Perfect description.
There was not a lot of factual basis to it. All it really does is scare the horses unnecessarily, put a whole lot of orange cones around something simply because you feel unsafe, even though you've got no experience in markets.
Didn't I tell you it's a cone-free zone here? You're not allowed to mention orange cones here. It's the bottom layer of tyranny. We all know that.
Oh, I'm sorry, Paul. I just drove through a whole gauntlet of them to get back into Devonport today. So they're on my mind. I'm sick of them. But I'm glad. I won't mention them again, I promise.
I saw a road that had been closed full of cones. So, you know, that's how ridiculous it's got.
Oh, you know,
no one's even driving up there. Maybe they were storing them there. But those stories, like we're just talking about, they get clicks, though, don't they? And it's all about clicks. You sort of got to make someone just a little edgy with fear that they'll click and you get the return.
Yeah, they are. I think fear vampires and there's anger in angertainment and all of that.
Oh, that's a good word. I like that
angertainment.
One. Angertainment. Yeah.
But I mean, in the world of investing, we've got to be laser focused on the facts and try and work out actually what's going on and avoid any kind of emotion or spin in that, or we're going to make mistakes.
Though you'd have gut feel applying.
You do. I think what I felt this time is normally I'm pretty brave in markets, but because I'd had a good 12 months of getting a bit soft, I mean, we were up 20% last year across all our, nearly 20% across all our portfolios. If you have it too good for long, you do get a little bit soft and you've got to keep that bravery there.
Fat and happy.
You don't want to be fat and happy. You want to be lean and hungry.
Yeah. So has it all sort of, Humpty all come back together again now?
Yeah, it's back on a winning streak. I mean, US inflation came below expectation last night. We're seeing interest rates continue to moderate, as we've just seen in New Zealand.
Yeah.
Of course, as interest rates come down, assets do get a bid, and there's been a lot of undervalued property sitting in share markets, a lot of stuff that's been smashed unnecessarily, and we're really looking forward to the upswing. It's been a great time to get in, and you need these chances to get in.
Should we move on now to the piece, well, around the piece that you've written, residential property, number one investment for many Kiwis, and you go through, you really break it down. It's really interesting. I don't know where you want to start on that. One thing that caught me is here, property is a huge proportion of people's worth, but in the United States, correct me if I'm wrong, 30% have equities to the value of $500,000. So that's completely different from here. What is more, what's the word, durable, more secure, the comparison?
Well, as Kiwis, we love property. I mean, I love property because it's physical, it's tangible. I'm imagining some of those beautiful properties down in Queenstown where you are with those views of the lake.
Yeah.
I'm best to stay clear of property because I'm a lousy hand at DIY. but Kiwis generally love property. I don't know whether it's our pioneer background, but you gave that very interesting stat that Americans are less invested in property, and now you mentioned 30% of American households actually have a share portfolio of $500,000 or more.
Mm.
And what we've seen over the past 5 years is the S&P 500, the index of shares, is up 80%. But over 5 years, our poor old Kiwi housing is only up 5%. And that excludes...
Oh, man. Oh,
yeah,
man.
We've been underperforming. And that excludes, obviously, all the work and things that you need to do on property. And the other problem we've got is 60% of all our wealth in New Zealand is in housing.
Yeah.
And you can't blame people for being excited about property investment, even still up till now, because we've had such a great run in the past. I mean, New Zealand over the past 10 years has been a millionaire maker. I mean, we were among the top 10 countries generating millionaires. We had a 48% increase in our millionaire population, ahead of Australia, ahead of Switzerland. And that's just because of this rampant property growth. I mean, the UK lost 8% of their millionaires over the same period. So we're really outperforming. But you've got to ask the question, well, how much of that growth is just due to artificial shortages in land that makes New Zealand property very, very expensive? And we've got to do something about that. I mean, we've got tens of thousands of kids living in tents and cars and caravans. Fifth biggest bank in the country is the bank of mum and dad.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's many of us who don't want to be part of that bank, but our home prices are out of control.
So the market has operated in a particular way to preserve that value, has it, at the cost? And you've just given us some of the costs, people living in cars, tents, the affordability. I think it's 8.2 times the median salary to buy your average house. Have I got that right? And three is kind of the benchmark. So we're way over that.
Yeah, three is considered a global, three times your household income. The purchase price of your house is considered a global affordable level. And here in Auckland, we are over eight times. So I don't know how people do it without two pretty high incomes or the bank of mum and dad. And it just skews the whole economy. I mean, our housing market is five times our GDP, which is huge. In the US, it's less than two times their GDP. So it's skewed wrongly, and we're investing in assets that aren't particularly productive. I mean, it's productive building new homes, but it's not that productive buying existing homes to rent out to people. It becomes a bit of a Ponzi.
It seems to me that it's just too easy, and that's why it's become like it is, because when you can inflate your wealth by just buying a home, really. You don't have to do much thinking. You just need to get the money, don't you? And then you get the policies that preserve the configuration to allow that to continue, because no one wants to go backwards.
Yes, well, I mean, the main thing that people have really got out of it is capital gain. And there have been many years in New Zealand where people's homes or portfolios of rental properties earn a lot more than they do by virtue of the fact that they're still standing.
Well, I remember when our family home in Wellington was sold in the late 70s, it went for 40 grand. When it was sold in 2001 again, and they'd done a bit of building, it was 1.1 million.
Yep.
I mean, think about that. And my parents thought they got a good price back in 78 or 79 or whenever.
Yeah, it's huge, and it's a capital gain. But I think what the current government has realised, Chris Bishop there, and I think it's quite a smart realisation that if you don't sort this out, you will not remain in power, because you're starting to nudge at the level where only 60% of New Zealanders roughly own their own homes. When you get a critical mass of younger people who are locked out of the housing market, they'll do two things. They'll either leave or they'll vote against you.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think Bishop's quite smart to say, no, I'm going to make some bold choices. And he's got a plan here called Going for Housing Growth. I don't know if it's going to work. Problem with politicians is they think they're in control of all these levers, and often the levers aren't connected to much. And that was certainly
linkage.
They're just not wired up. And that was certainly the case with Kiwi Build, where they were going to build all these tens of thousands of homes, and actually government couldn't build anything. But I think this is a smarter way, where you're looking at the policy settings of unlocking 30 years of land. Because what's happened all around Auckland, I mean, you've got these lovely lifestyle blocks, 2 to 10 acres typically, and they're not productive as farms.
No.
And they're not, I mean, wonderful places to live. They're not particularly productive for housing either. And there at the moment, there's 140,000 of those land lots on the edge of Auckland, which are all future urban. So that means over the next how many years they were to be drip fed into the unitary plan. And what Going for Housing Growth does is it says, well, we're not drip feeding them. Next year, guess what, guys? They're going to be all on the market.
Also, they're going to flood the zone.
Well, that's my understanding, that all those future urban will be immediately available for residential build. And I don't know. I mean, the analysis I've done is that could be game changing, because you're adding, you've got 540,000 sections in Auckland, dwellings in Auckland, and you add another 140,000 sections, you're adding 25% supply, immediately available residential land that's not artificially ring-fenced as country living or whatever. And that really should lower the cost of land, potentially for a full-size section, by hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Wow, okay.
Now we're talking, providing you've got the infrastructure supporting it. And there is some reform there, I think, with the Infrastructure Funding and Financing Act, where rather than forcing councils to have to provide the infrastructure all at once, you're looking to sort of have targeted rates, allow repayment over 50 years, and also a pretty large government fund to fund some of that incentive. So, look, I mean, all power to them.
Well, it sounds sensible, right? It does. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it does. I think the hard pill for New Zealanders, for New Zealand property investors to swallow, is if it does work, if Bishop is successful, you're not going to see the same level of property capital growth you've had before. I mean, a bull case scenario, I think if it's successful, your property values will stabilise. I think a bear case scenario, they could fall another 20%.
Ouch.
Yeah, and I mean, in a town of alcoholics, where your pub is property investment, and you suddenly turn off the taps, I'm not sure how well it's going to go. I think there will be a few hangovers to be had, a few cold baths, but
yeah,
it's really good
grumpy,
at the economy because you've got to get younger people into housing.
So the bigger picture outweighs the individual circumstances in the end, doesn't it, when we get to this level? Someone's got to do something. Because in the end, what happens? Looks like people leave the country, people don't vote for you, and you get this disenchantment, which can't be good for cohesive society and trying to get ahead.
Oh, if people can't get into homes, I mean, you want to have a property-owning democracy where a man's home or a woman's home is their castle, and they have pride of ownership and a slice of the economy. They've got their little piece of New Zealand, and you need to make that available to younger people, or you're on a suicide mission. They're not able to move ahead. They're not able to form capital. They're not able to have children. So I think it is the right move. It's also going to depend on what happens with immigration.
Yeah. Well, that's been down last year considerably by about nearly 60,000. So it's already.
Yeah, you're right there. I mean, I saw the latest numbers. We still had net migration of over 70,000. So that's still quite a high number. And I know people are nervous of that. But I've looked at New Zealand immigration, and we get some pretty good people coming in. And they're 80% more likely to start a business.
Oh,
very entrepreneurial.
Okay.
There was a survey done, it's getting over a decade old now, but it looked at the fiscal surplus of people in New Zealand. This is how much profit the IRD gets out of you, basically.
Okay, yeah.
So for a migrant, depending on how long they're here, they generate a surplus of $2,000 to $4,000 a year.
Okay.
The average Kiwi is about $900.
Oh, all right, half.
Yeah, so you bring these guys in, they start businesses, they're entrepreneurial, they're here to make something for themselves and for their family, and that can be quite successful for the country. And certainly we've seen that in Auckland. I mean, Mount Roskill used to be a bit of a lefty, Labour-loving area. Phil Goff's electorate, I believe it was Michael Woods.
The River of Filth guy. Sorry, I've just got to say that every time.
Well, he got taken to the woodshed in the last election. Mount Roskill flipped to National.
Yep.
You wouldn't have expected that, but Mount Roskill's changed. There's a lot of hardworking migrants there running businesses, and they don't want policies where the government's constantly extracting things from them. They want to get out and build their own success and back themselves. So good on them.
Yeah, no, fair enough. I was just thinking, I'm always, you know, going on about the good old days, and who knows if I've got a point there. But I do remember when I was younger that the property wasn't seen, residential property wasn't seen as a business, you know, so much. It was, as you explained just before, nostalgically, a place to have a plot of land in Kiwi land. You bring up the family and somewhere to be. It's affordable. You can feel secure there. Is it time to, or maybe these measures will over time, to change the national psychology away from how we view property now as a kind of a business thing as well as, you know, somewhere to live, and move to more like the US, you know, with wealth generated in other areas? You want to accumulate value, you do it through, you know, stocks, let's say. That would put more vibrancy, I would imagine, into our share market locally and investing, et cetera, and sort of try and just move the culture away from, what, the last 20 or 30 years, would you say?
Yeah, definitely. I think that nostalgia you mentioned, maybe you come through in the 70s when we had a huge amount of home building and lots of new subdivisions coming through. I mean, I grew up late 70s, early 80s, and I remember being in a great neighbourhood where people just enjoyed their homes. We had a market garden behind us. Everybody knew everybody. Housing wasn't really an investment, apart from your own home. So I think we probably do need to get back to that and look for more productive investments, because as per that example I gave you, I mean, the S&P 500 moved ahead 80% over the past 5 years, and Kiwi housing's really struggled. And everything skewed wrongly, where younger people can't get into their homes, and you now need a drastic release of artificial land boundaries to enable that.
Boy, it's taken a while to get to this then, hasn't it?
It sure has.
Like pulling teeth.
It sure has. I mean, it needs to happen.
Yeah.
And then we'll be able, I mean, we're not having enough children as New Zealanders. I mean, I say to South African friends of mine who've got three or four kids, I say, thank you for coming. We can't have, we can't have enough kids. We need you guys.
Have more.
Yeah, we sure do. We need good quality migrants.
Well, we shouldn't be incentivizing that then.
Time. Well, you've got to have an affordable home so you can, you've got the space for kids.
Yeah. Because people are not having families because of economic circumstances, aren't they? I mean, that's a driver. That's a driver.
Yeah, it is. And there's been so much money leave the New Zealand economy going to Australian banks because particularly in Auckland, people are so heavily mortgaged that it does put a strain on financing. And I think many people will be looking forward to some relief based on the OCR cut to bring those rates down. But that is a symptom of very high home prices and people really having to compete for a shortage of homes. So hopefully opening up a whole lot of land around Auckland's hinterland is gonna change that. And I mean, equally, we also have a lot of people leaving New Zealand. I don't think not being able to afford a home is the main reason. A lot of people go for opportunities. And we've also had a lot of bureaucrats actually lose their job. And maybe some of those people are going over to places like Melbourne and being replaced by hardworking business owners. I'm fine with that.
Yeah, good luck, Melbourne. Good luck with that one.
Well, they send us our 501s. Maybe these bureaucrats are our 502s that we're sending back.
Yeah, yeah. I'm circling back to where we began and that OCR cut. You're the money man. What effect will that have on people's, repayments? Are they even going to notice it? 0.25, have I got that right? 0.25% cut.
Yeah, you've only got 25 basis points. So there's not going to be a lot in the pipeline anytime soon. It's just going to be around the edges. But, I mean, this announcement comes through every 6 weeks. So the question is really whether we're on a trajectory where we might see another 25, and maybe end up with an OCR down around 4.5, which would be a lot more meaningful.
Yeah.
But equally, you've got to keep control of inflation. So it's between a rock and a hard place.
Don't print money.
You don't want to print money because then you've got a lot more inflation.
Yeah, well, that's what they did, though. That's why we're in this mess, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. We are in a mess, really, since COVID. In my view, due to years of economic mismanagement and also just another whole layer of red tape. I mean, people were having to pay a lot of taxes, deal with a lot of compliance and regulation, and not getting any benefit from it. I mean, I'm being facetious, but I would have rather paid the mafia. At least I would have got the protection I paid for.
Yeah. It's a shakedown. It was a shakedown pretty well, wasn't it?
But, hopefully we're on a better track now and we're looking to streamline things, make things a bit more efficient and open up housing.
Those folks are heading to Melbourne now, are they? Like you just said.
I sure hope so. I mean, people do tell me Australia is such a lucky country, but I'm hearing from people over there, well, you build a business, you got capital gains tax.
Yeah.
You go to register a six-cylinder car, it's $1,000.
Oh, man.
You go buy a house, a stamp duty. I don't think the grass is greener. I think it's pretty dry and pretty brown. I think the settings in New Zealand are better to build wealth, to build long-term wealth. And I think the average Kiwi doesn't realise how good things are here and how lucky this country is.
So still we're lucky. Huh?
Comparatively?
Yeah. Compared to South Africa.
Well, yeah, high unemployment, 32.5%. Yeah, I think this is still a really good place and hopefully we can maximise our opportunities here and help our younger people get into housing because that's really the bedrock of property-owning democracy.
Yeah. And to finish up, Simon, time and money, the average person gets 4,300 weeks. And you say, sadly, most people won't use their time or money that effectively. I think that's about 26,000 days or something.
Yeah, that's right. A little bit of personal finance news. I've been reading a great little book called 4,000 Weeks by Oliver Berkman. And I converted that to the New Zealand situation where the average Kiwi will live to 82 years old. That means you've got 4,300 weeks. Imagine each week in a bank account, $4,300, a dollar every week. Yeah. The main lesson from that book about time is it becomes more valuable when you can synchronize it with the time of others.
Oh,
so
okay.
On a Monday morning, working away all by yourself, time doesn't probably have the same value as a Sunday with your friends and family where you can enjoy their company and do things and share things. So I think the interesting question is, time has more value when you can synchronize it with the time of people you like to hang out with. And in my
business, go along with that. Yep, I go along with that.
Brilliant. Totally. And in my business, I have a lot of people who are focused on financial independence and retiring early and being financially free. I mean, that's a fantastic goal. But when you reach goals, you've also got to ask the question, well, what does that look like? Sometimes success is not always what it's cracked out to be. And I would just also add, you want to invest in relationships. So when you do have that that free time, you're able to enjoy it with other people that you've invested in. And it always takes courage to invest in relationships. And of course, money's different. The value of a dollar today is worth more than the value of a dollar in the future. So what you need to be doing as an investor is investing for the future so you can grow your money and investing your time so you can grow your relationships. Yep. And both of those things take courage. So, yeah, I mean, just keep be a learning machine, keep learning and keep backing yourself.
And don't worry ahead.
Hey, right? What's that order?
Don't worry about things ahead of time, you know, ahead. So, you know, to worry about what things might be like in the future now is a waste of worry, really, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, worry's toxic. Worry and fear, biggest enemies that we've got. Fear's a conspiracy theory about yourself. be brave. Be brave. That's what you guys are about, Reality Check Radio. Brave and, media. Good on
and
you.
And be real. I remember you've just reminded me hearing something a few years ago. A survey was done on rest home residents in the US, like a big survey. And one of the questions is, what is your greatest regret? And the greatest regret, and that's why I mentioned it, was worry. I worried too much. I spent too much time worrying. And now, as I reflect, I see I didn't need to burn up all that time and energy on worry. I should have used it for something else, more positive. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I hear you.
So don't worry, Simon. Okay. Nobody worry.
Don't give me any more Red Mondays.
Okay. Okay. What's that song, Blue Monday? Is it your order?
Monday. Yeah. I'll have some Green Mondays where the portfolios just keep going up. I'll have some of those.
All right. Before you go, Simon, how do people get in touch?
Our best way is jump on our website at wealthmorning.com. You can get a free ebook and reach us there.
All right, Simon Angelo, great to have you back. Thanks on Money Talks.
Thanks, Paul.
Loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it. And right now, they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.